At this time, I would like to turn the time over to Dr. William Sook, Director of the Superfund Research Program. Bill?
Thank you, Justin. And welcome, everyone, to this afternoon's webinar on the strategic planning process for the Superfund Research Program. I'm going to give you an idea about the program from the standpoint of its mandates, some historical perspective, the strategic planning process, and then the response to questions. This is the agenda that we're going to go through today after my welcoming. The purpose of this webinar is to get your input on the future directions of the Superfund Research Program. Essentially, this is the fourth such type of activity that we've been engaged in since the inception of the program. It's important that we do a process like this as we work towards ensuring the continued success of the program and can allow for the program to mature. So I'm going to go to the next slide, which is in your thing, slide number 4. Why is it advancing? We're kind of hung up here. Hang on. Okay, there we go. I got it. Superfund Research Program was established under the Superfund Amendment and Reauthorization Act in 1986. It's administered by NIEHS, and it supports interdisciplinary research in a very broad array of disciplines, from molecular biology to fate and transport and hydrogeology. It also facilitates training. As well as research translation and outreach engagement. And slide 5 shows that the program was established under mandates in 4 broad areas. And they are the development of advanced techniques for the detection, assessment, and evaluation of human health effects of hazardous substances, the development of methods to assess the risk to human health presented by hazardous substances, the development of methods and technologies to detect hazardous substances in the environment, and the development of basic biological, chemical, and physical methods to reduce the amount of toxicity of hazardous substances. So the point here is that we have some very broad mandates for the program, and the scope of this program is actually extends beyond the scope of NIEHS. We look at the program in a much more holistic approach towards research and training in improving public health and in reducing exposures, and essentially it is a prevention program. The overarching goals of the program are to elucidate the relationship between exposure to hazardous substances and disease, to develop cost-effective and efficient cleanup strategies and tools to detect exposure to hazardous substances. The overall intent, one of the overall goals and intent, is to conduct science that contributes to human health, risk assessment, and decision-making for remediation. The program itself, these three areas essentially lead towards the reduction of risk of exposure, and hopefully to the improvement of public health. It is an interdisciplinary program that strives to not only do good, solid science to allow for decision making, but also to translate those research findings to train future scientists and to engage the community in order to, again, to improve public health. Okay, that's it. Those are my introductory remarks. I welcome you all for participating in this webinar, and I look forward to a very productive and active discussion as the next 2 hours unfolds. I'm now going to turn it over to Dr. Heather Henry, who will talk now about the mechanisms of funding.
Thank you, Dr. Stook. If you would, please turn to slide number 7. Slide 7 lists the 3 mechanisms of funding that the Superfund Research Program utilizes to achieve its mandates. The first is the multi-project program grants, which is called the P42. This is a multi-project structure that allows for integration across disciplines, and we stress interactions between biomedical research as well as non-biomedical research to understand the complexity of what's encountered at real Superfund and hazardous waste sites. The research incorporates basic as well as application-based research, and it comes out in response to a request for applications that comes out annually. We also have an individual researcher program called the R01. This program is designed to address specific areas of interest and particularly to tackle issues of emerging concern for Superfund. We've had 2 recent requests for applications, one on in-situ approaches for remediation of contaminated sediments, and another for using nanotechnology-based tools to understand the mechanisms of bioremediation. Lastly, we have an STTR program. This is a small business innovative research and technology transfer grants. And these are designed to foster the commercialization of technologies and particularly focus on products and devices relevant to cleanup technologies as well as monitoring technologies. So if you turn to the next slide, slide 8, you can see what our program looks like. We have the purple stars represent the P42, or these multi-project program grants, and currently we have 16 of those. We also have about 8 SBIR grants indicated by the pink circles, and the green circles represent the individual research project grants. Altogether, including all of the investigators and the institutions that are working with all of these grantees, totals about over 500 different investigators. And we also, in these grants that we administer, are also training over 100 graduate students per year. And although we don't require it, there is research going on at over 200 hazardous waste sites throughout the U.S. We do all of this at a budget that's actually less than $50 million a year. If you could please turn to slide number 9. We've spoken a lot about the research of the program, but we just wanted to point out that the SRP considers that the whole, in order to make a real impact, there's more than just research to be done. And what we try to emphasize is the importance of training the next generation of researchers, getting the research out into communities where it can be utilized, and getting research out into translating research into other mechanisms so that it can be used by end users. Real briefly, what we do for training is we allow large multi-project program grants to have training cores under which they design interdisciplinary activities or internships for their students, their graduate students and postdocs, to learn either communication between different disciplines or to learn more about some of the reality of working with complex hazardous waste sites. In terms of community outreach, we stress, this is again something that we are able to accomplish through our multi-project program grants, whereas they have community outreach cores. And we stress for these community outreach cores that the researchers develop a two-way communication road between the communities and the researchers, establishing, understanding what the needs of the community are and using that to understand what kind of information the program can provide to them to lend the expertise that they need for the challenges that they're facing. Our research translation core, again, primarily occurs through research translation primarily occurs through the research translation cores, which are part of the multi-project program grants. And these cores, their responsibility is to take the research that comes from the program and find end users, whether that be federal government partners or technology transfer opportunities or communicating research findings to broader audiences. So we intend for these cores to do some of the legwork to make sure that there's a connection between the research that comes out of the program and those who can use it. However, we at SRP, at NIEHS, we also take the responsibility on ourselves to make connections between the research and build partnerships between ourselves and other federal agencies who are also tasked with dealing with hazardous substances. So if you would please turn to slide 10, I'm going to pass it off to Dr. Claudia Thompson, who's going to tell us about strategic planning, why we're doing this.
Okay, so in front of you have slide 10, why strategic planning? As it's been mentioned, the Superfund Research Program has been in existence over 20-some years. During that time, we've had input in many different ways to get feedback as far as how the program is doing, what kind of directions that we should be going in. We also convene external advisory panels of experts to provide some very focused input into both what they could consider successes of the program and where we need to go in the future. Last year in early 2009, we had a strategic planning external advisory panel that met that was charged to provide information to us as we develop a framework for developing a strategic plan for the SRP to guide us over the next 5 years. During that sets of meetings and advice, they more formally, explicitly stated that, you know, it would be very helpful for the program to really enhance its research translation and the research it was going to develop, in fact, a strategic plan. And so we are now undertaking that process by talking with lots of different groups and individuals. We believe that this strategic plan is really going to provide a framework to guide us over the next 5 years to help us prioritize the science, the scope of science that the program conducts, to establish an approach for attaining balance and growth while enhancing translation, community outreach, and training, along with developing guidelines for managing the program decision making. We feel that both as a tool for the SRP as it moves its programs forward, we also feel that the strategic plan is a really good communication tool to the external community to understand where the program's at and where it wants to be heading over the next 5 years. As we develop plans, you can see where that fits in, where you might fit into what we're trying to do. So ultimately, we feel the strategic plan will enable us to better promote the use of the resources from the SRP in protecting human health. So now if you go to slide 11, this slide just really sort of lists our reaching out to stakeholders and identifies a number of different groups that we've sort of identified, but also there may be others that we might be missing, and we'd like to hear from you as far as that. So now if you go to slide 12, I'd just like to briefly explain the process that we've been going through the last 2 to 3 months. We've held a number of web-based seminars. The one that you're participating in today is one of those. We've held a series of public meetings. In fact, we are broadcasting from the EPA building in Crystal City, where this morning we held a face-to-face public meeting with EPA to basically go over the same questions that we're going to be asking you in a few minutes. We put out in the Federal Register and in the NIH guide, we advertised for requests for information. And this is taking the form of a series of 7-8 questions that we will be talking about in a bit. We have an online questionnaire that people can go on and ask more fully. So, after today, we want to have this nice open dialogue for the next hour, hour and a half. But after the day is done and you feel there's some points or it's stirred other thoughts that you might have, please, please go online and fill out the questionnaire. We'll find it will be particularly useful. So slide 13 just is a screenshot of the slide on our website for the online questionnaire. And if you go to slide 14, so the strategic planning process we go through today. You've got today's discussion. They'll be framed around the 8 questions that are in the questionnaire that's online. The input that you give us today from this webinar will be summarized. We will compile the input, identify themes, and then develop a formal written strategic plan. That draft will then be posted both on our website and in the Federal Register. And again, we would be asking for comments to that. With the comments that come in from our draft plan, we will finalize the strategic plan to present to our National Advisory Environmental Health Council meeting, which is scheduled for May of this year. And so with that, I'm going to turn the webinar over to Mr. Larry Reed, who will be facilitating and moderating our discussion this afternoon.
Thank you, Claudia. I appreciate that this is a well-sized webinar population that we have. We have about 40 registrants and represents a broad array of stakeholders ranging from federal agencies to EPA regional offices to state offices, industries, nonprofits, multiple universities. So, again, this is, I think, just the right size for people to please participate in this next part of the presentation. And this is really intended to be interactive. As Bill, Beth, Claudia, and Heather had said, laid the groundwork for the background on the program. These are the key questions that the Superfund Research Program strategic planning is going to be focused on. And so what we're hoping to that you all feel comfortable in addressing these questions, providing your input. We're going to be going over all of them here and remind people that they can either speak up and respond, give us your insights, your suggestions in response to these questions, and that there is a question mark symbol on the top of your page that you can click on and submit an email question that we'll be addressing. And again, we're on page 15 of the presentation. And what I'd like to do is just give a brief overview on this slide and the next of the 7 different areas that we're going to be asking for your input on the future strategic directions of the Superfund Research Program. The first basic area is looking at is the scope of the science. And given a very broad program and this multiple mandates, the 4 mandates that were laid out by Bill earlier, basically what we're looking for, what prioritization criteria should guide the future of the program and achieve overall SRP program balance. The second question area that we'll be coming back through and going over one at a time, but the second one is what approaches, either research or programmatic or administrative, do you believe would be the most effective way to foster interdisciplinary interactions in the research program and working with stakeholders? The third area is training, where we're basically looking at trying to get input at what are the approaches or key activities that the SRP should consider in order to continue to enhance the impact of graduate training. Moving on to slide 16, the rest of the questions we will be addressing include the area of identifying stakeholders. We'd like your input as far as who are the key Superfund Research Program stakeholders and what would be the best approaches or mechanisms that can be used to effectively interact with these key stakeholders. The fifth key research question area that we're looking at is dealing with the important topic of research translation. Here we're looking at what are the best ways for the Superfund Research Program to achieve its critical goal of accelerating research translation, research being put to use by various stakeholders to further the goals of the broader Superfund program. The sixth area deals with community engagement, and there again we're looking at what are the important approaches to be used to pursue community engagement, and that would be most appropriate for the Superfund research program. And secondly, what key disciplines would be needed to have this greatest impact on community engagement. Finally, the last question area we're looking at, the seventh area, is grant mechanisms. What research team structures, as we've talked about the interdisciplinary nature of the program, and disciplines are needed to hopefully contribute to the greatest advances in achieving the Superfund research program mandates. So those are the seven research topic question areas that we're asking your input onto today. Hopefully you've had time to consider that. Again, please either submit an email comment or we will also provide time on the phone lines here for people to submit questions. And moving on to slide 17, the first key area that we're looking at is the general topic of the scope of the science of the Superfund Research Program. As we said earlier, given the breadth of the four program mandates, what are key criteria that SRP could use to set priorities for achieving program balance? And some examples are given here on this slide, hopefully to start the discussion, dealing with, for example, potential for exposure, number of sites perhaps. Is that a criterion you think would be a key one in setting priorities for the program, the recalcitrance of the contaminants in remediating the sites, is that an area, a type of priority setting mechanism that the program should use, dealing with new toxicity modalities, balance between hazardous waste versus hazardous substances, obviously dealing with other program areas in addition to hazardous waste, basic slash applied science, basic versus applied. What balance would you see there?
Hello, Larry. Again, this is Justin. I cannot hear you anymore. If everyone would just hold on the line, we'll see what the problem is.
Oh, sorry. Now can you hear me, Justin? Justin, can you hear me now? Is that coming through well?
This is Janet. I can hear you in RTP in our building in Keystone.
Thank you.
I can hear you in Kansas City.
Okay. That is what they call an operator error on my part. My apologies. And again, just opening this up, again, this program has lots of complexities, as you all know, in Superfund. And so the research agenda, future research agenda, that the Superfund research program is concerned with has to set priorities among those. So this is a point where I think we'd like to see if we could get some responses from you all on the line or by email of any of your comments, suggestions for setting future priorities for the program.
While we're waiting for questions to come in, there was an email question that came that was actually in response to one of the background slides, but I think also plays to this particular slide. It came in from Patricia Cassano from GE, who wanted some clarification as to what does prioritize the scope of the science mean. You know, is it to prioritize the issues, prioritize the projects, but just the prioritized scope did not make, was not particularly clear. So in fact, I think this slide helps to define that a little bit better. We're really talking about prioritizing issues, thinking about the balance between, as we've talked about, different, you know, new emerging contaminants, ones that are still problems at sites, et cetera, the balance between basic fundamental knowledge versus more applied research, and then, you know, what big issues are coming up, prioritizing those in the grand scheme of what makes sense for a research program. So I hope that helps everybody in thinking about this question.
Any comments on the phone line? Now that that clarification is there, that we're, again, suggestions for those of you who are probably dealing with critical hazardous substance and hazardous waste issues out there, from your broad experience in dealing with the Superfund program, or specific actions that you're taking at sites, could you weigh in here? We would appreciate your insights into how we could best go about setting priorities for the program in the future.
This is Shelley Brody. I'll start if you'd like to hear some ideas just based on the priorities I've heard. Can you all hear me?
Yes. You sound great, Shelley. Come on. Keep going.
Thanks. There's a couple that come to mind, and I guess I'm a little conflicted on priorities, but here's the two that, in my experience, 20-plus years at Superfund, what I think would be helpful in the long run is emerging new chemicals. For example, the MTBE, some of the things that have been used in the marketplace that we find out later create more of a problem than what they were intended to replace. So I think if we could get a jump on that early on, you're going to see some benefit down the road when something doesn't become, prevalent in the marketplace, you know, too late. We're always playing catch-up. So I could see why that would be important. The other thing is more nebulous, but I'll describe it this way. When I think of the number of sites, that isn't, to me, the most important because it depends on what's the exposure. Is there a big environmental exposure or human exposure? You can have a lot of sites, but maybe they all minimally impact one's health or the environment. But what I'm trying to describe is examples where we know, either through health departments or EPA or the states, where there are exposures, and yet those particular scenarios fall between the cracks. And what I'm, example would be early on with the national priority list sites, we, in the trenches, so to speak, discovered that there were a lot of children in the urban area who would fall through the cracks simply because the way the HRS would score, those particular areas where they were exposed to hazardous substances, say in old buildings or whatever, it wasn't scoring high enough, and yet it wasn't imminent dangerously enough that they could fit under the removal program. And we tried to address that when there were some HRS revisions. So if people know even anecdotally throughout their experiences areas that perhaps don't quite fit and maybe are being overlooked, those would be areas that I would say try to get a jump on that and look at, you know, that particular chemical or means to either address it or inform the community. So that's where research translation could be, you know, a big help. Those are the two that come to mind off the top of my head.
Thank you, Shelley. Maybe go back, Patricia at GE, now that Claudia was able to clarify your question, do you have any suggested priority setting schemes for dealing with future research needs?
Well, I guess a couple of things, and keep in mind I'm not a scientist, although I did major in chemistry and biology a long time ago. So I bring maybe a slightly different perspective to this than most of the folks of the phone. And I also should say I spent 10 years at the Justice Department in the Environmental Enforcement Section, so I like to think I think of these things, sorts of things relatively objectively. But, you know, from my perspective, when you're thinking about where should you go with the program, it always helps to think about, you know, where you have been and where you are now. And to that end, I took a look at the website for the Superfund Research Program because I thought, well, it would be useful to know what the strategy is now. And there is a lot of information on the Superfund Research Program website. You know, you start with one page and it leads to another page, which leads you to another page, and which leads you to another page. But what I didn't find that would be helpful to somebody like me is literally a map of where, how the different research projects in any one group or activity relate. And what the end point at which they all are aiming. So that's one thought. Whatever you do in terms of strategic planning going forward, I think that in addition to having a narrative description of what you're doing, it would help to make things clear for people like me, but really also for the agency, how the different projects fit together if you literally map them out. So that's number one. And then just more generally, and this may be more responsive to your question, it seems to me that with respect to research that already has been done, there's still a lot of uncertainty out there, both on the exposure side and the hazard side. And so I think one criterion that should be kept in mind in doing your planning is, you know, is this research likely to reduce uncertainty? So that would be very helpful to everybody.
Okay. Thank you, Patricia. Any other comments from people on the line there? Do we have other regional folks, too, EPA regional folks, who would like to weigh in?
This is Larry Tannenbaum. Can I weigh in?
Please.
Okay. I just would like to say that I think chemical mixtures is a big area that really needs to be explored. Come at it mostly in my work from the ecological risk assessment side, but since this is a human health discussion that we're having, I think it's equally applicable there. So to piece it or parse it into the list of things to consider here. Maybe it comes under, I suppose, elucidating new toxicity modalities or something like that. But just to understand whether it's human health or eco, a receptor, if you have multiple contaminants at a site, a receptor is not exposed individually to a chemical at a time. And if we have to grow beyond that so that we're not making chemical-specific statements about it passes for this, it doesn't pass for this, it passes for lead, it fails for chromium, but that's just not what's going on. In my work, I say an ecological receptor doesn't suck out of the soil all the chromium on day one, on Monday, on Tuesday the PCBs, on Wednesday it washes it down with the lead. That's not what's going on. And this is, I don't really see an effort being made to really gain ground in that area and have a more realistic assessment generated at the end of it all.
Okay. Thank you, Larry. And Larry, you're with U.S. Army Public Health Command. Is that correct?
Right, provisional. It used to be called, or it still is, Center for Health Promotion and Preventive Medicine, but we're switching our name over. Personally, I've made some strides in the chemical mixture thing. I think I have it pretty much licked the eco side with something that was recently patented for us that we intend to be using more. We've applied it at a couple of NPL sites already. Maybe that could lay the basis for some human health areas to pick up on.
Larry, and as was mentioned earlier, we certainly hope that you will fill out, or at least those parts of the online questionnaire that we mentioned, to give us more detail and, address your thoughts more thoroughly, too, as you can, as you got more thoughts. So we certainly appreciate your input on the phone here.
Sure thing.
Okay. Any other comments, suggestions? Again, please feel free to weigh in either by email or by phone. And just calling to see, let me look over. Heather, are there any other emails that we have at this point?
Well, we've gotten a couple of hits from Mary Dureski from Wayne State University. There is no question listed there, so I wonder if maybe it's worth clarifying that if you hit the question mark button, you need to type in what your question is or even what your comment is, and then we will mention that during this forum.
Yes. So please take advantage of that again, tapping on the question mark, and we appreciate whatever comments, insights you have, suggestions. We will tee those up here so others can respond to them and get the benefit of your experience there in the field. So, Mary, please do weigh in there, and we will bring up that comment. We can always go back, roll back as people come in with additional comments, even on earlier questions. And
here it is. Yeah, now we've heard from her. So she wanted to express that the importance is on the effects of human health as such as vulnerable populations, that this should be a priority. And she feels like it is irrespective of whether it's a new or persistent toxicant. So thank you, Mary Zareski from Wayne University, for that comment.
Good deal. Is there any other comments? Otherwise, why don't we move on to slide 18, which deals with interdisciplinary research. And that, as again, the presenters earlier on focused that the interdisciplinary basis of the program has been critical from the founding of it over 20 years ago, and the importance there being the interaction of the complex sciences that are involved at hazardous waste sites brings that to bear in furthering the scientific knowledge and emphasizing a multidisciplinary research team. And basically, what we were looking at here is getting your input as far as the range of disciplines that you would propose be integrated into the research teams employed by the Superfund research program in the future. Particularly, we know when you're working at hazardous waste sites that the remedial project managers have to assemble a team of multi-disciplines ranging from site characterization, chemistry, geology, hydrogeology, to overall risk, dealing with exposure, hazard, toxicology, sometimes in statistics and things like a wide variety of scientific participants before you even get to the engineering side of dealing with the side of the risk. So again, here's where we would appreciate your suggestions, recommendations, thoughts about the future approaches, whether it's research approaches, administrative management approaches that would most effectively promote interdisciplinary interaction. And while we're waiting for comments there, from previous outreach sessions that we've had, you know, this is a difficult aspect because science tends to work within scientific disciplines. So the Superfund Research Program has really worked closely with major academic programs across the country to require that as part of the grant process that they assemble an interdisciplinary team in order to make the research most useful to dealing with hazardous substances and hazardous waste sites. Any comments from suggestions from those on the phone?
Larry, this is Mike Gill from Region 9 EPA.
Yes, Mike. Please, go ahead.
First of all, I appreciate the process that you guys have set up and are asking the questions. That's really helpful since none of us have all the resources we really need, so leveraging each other's expertise is great. I guess maybe to fit in the last number two, the last question of scope of science, perhaps looking at life cycles a little more, and that's a challenge that we have here in the regions as well, looking at life cycle of the use of chemicals, of the use of products, maybe following markets and see where the push is for large volumes, for potentially large exposures for chemicals might lead you down the path of what really needs to be researched. So it's sort of a life cycle analysis technique. And I think this goes back to a previous comment about MTBE, Shelley's comment that, you know, that's maybe what got us in the bind in the first place. And not looking at how these programs cross each other and the unintended consequences led to some problems, and that's not going to be the last time we ever hear that. So I think looking at life cycles can help to alleviate that. Is that kind of what you're looking for with the idea of interdisciplinary research?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's, and as you say, it's a cross-cutting sort of theme in setting priorities for the future part, future direction of the program, too. So thank you. Very insightful.
We had a comment from Mary Dureski from Wayne State University, and she has a list for us of expertise that is needed to, again, address the variety of issues that are encountered with Superfund type situations. And she lists policymakers, urban planners, geology engineers, toxicologists, physicians, community-based organizations, environmental justice advocates, community outreach and education specialists. And we thank you, Mary, for those comments.
Very helpful. Thank you. That's certainly moving beyond the, you know, the basic science disciplines that that have been employed historically. So thank you for that insight. Any other comments on approaches to further the interdisciplinary interactions of the Superfund research program before we move on to the next question?
This is Steve Hecker. I'm at the University of Washington. I'm actually not in the SRP center here, but I manage continuing education programs in hazardous substances. And I want to build on that last comment. My experience from another program we're involved in, which is NIOSH ERC and the research to practice emphasis, is that we often ignore that that there is a discipline of research translation and implementation, that we say as an afterthought that translation and getting it out to the field and practitioners is important, but then we leave it in the hands of our toxicologists or our industrial hygienists to do that as part of their project, when we actually need people with expertise in that translation and implementation phase. So I would put that in as re-emphasize that as a discipline unto itself that needs to be part of these.
Thank you. Good. Very helpful comments. I think we're about ready to move on to question three. On slide 19, and in this area dealing with training, we're looking for what overall kinds of activities or general approaches that the Superfund research program should consider employing to enhance the overall impact of graduate training. And again, here, as was said earlier on in the overview of the program, one of the key focus areas of the program has been to promote the next generation of research scientists, and has been very supportive of graduate training through multiple aspects of the grantees themselves at national meetings where we could make sure that we factor in graduate students into the various seminars and opportunities there are for research translation outreach. Again, I think the program is trying to not only generate future research scientists in academia, but has also been successful in some of their graduates being employed, as Dr. Heather Henry is here in the Superfund Research Program in Research Triangle Park, but also in the Agency for Toxic Substance Disease Registry, at state agencies, EPA's Office of Research and Development, local governments, and other related public health arenas. So this is one area where we would appreciate particularly maybe the academic participants on the webinar today who deal with this all the time. If you would like to give us some suggestions as far as your thoughts and possible ideas that SRP could employ in the future.
Larry, it's Mike Gill.
Yeah, Mike.
There's a program here that I don't know the formal name of, but it's basically an internship program, and a lot of times post grads, not just their bachelors, I suppose, come in for the summer and do a 2 or 3 month internship, and that gives folks a sense of, you know, what's happening in the regions and then in the field, and it may be a little distraction from research for these folks, but it also kind of gives them a little grounding. Is that kind of an idea that you might think might work?
That's an excellent idea, and maybe to build on that, and again, encourage others to jump in on this, at the annual Superfund Research Program meeting, one of the representatives from the University of North Carolina talked about them establishing an intern program, just as you were suggesting, Mike, where they've had their graduate students work with the state and sometimes going out to local Superfund sites in the general area of the state and not too far from the university. They've also discussed possible internships in Atlanta with the Agency of Toxic Substance Disease Registry. And so there have been discussions along that line of matching up very well-trained and very well-motivated research graduate students to contribute and learn from field environmental programs out there. So that is the kind of thing, Mike, that you raised there that has been at least discussed in at least one other optional area that would be key for consideration in the future. Any other interaction thoughts about that or other ways?
Through my bachelor program, I went to Northeastern University in Boston, which is now part of the SRP. It wasn't back then, but its main thrust in education is called a co-op plan, a cooperative education plan, and it's a program that takes 5 years instead of four, but you end up going and working for a company or for an agency or, you know, and you get 2 years experience in out of your 5 years, and then you get your bachelor's. This is sort of a take on that, but I would suggest maybe talking to one or two of the Northeastern University folks who the SRP works with, and I think there were a couple of them at the New York meeting. I don't recall their names, but they could certainly give you a lowdown on how that process works and maybe expand it into the SRP.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. And I think, Heather, we have a question or a comment coming in from email.
Yes, we do. Mary Dureski from Wayne State University has made a comment about training, and her comment was that opportunities for students to experience activities, and by activities meaning rotations, and all of the multi-discipline areas of the SRP would be a good idea. Also, some involvement, if possible, in public health aspects as well as community involvement would be recommended. She also suggests you might consider involvement with local health departments, regional ATSDR, and EPA programs. And we appreciate that comment. There's certainly some of that activity is going on within the training cores that we mentioned within these large multi-project program grants. But I think these are terrific ideas and maybe, you know, ideas that should be that our grantees or applicants should be made aware of. She also suggests that we might consider a master's program.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. Any other comments or people would like to build on those discussions that were brought up by Mike and Mary? Okay. Please, if these thoughts come to you, please send them any time. We're certainly glad to go back to any of the questions we've raised here as we walk through the seven different areas. At this point, I'd like to move on to slide 20, which deals with the stakeholders for the program. And the key kind of question areas that we're looking at the strategic planning for the Superfund research program is the basic things always you have to focus on is identifying the different stakeholder groups. I think Claudia mentioned some of those earlier. And then what are the types of approaches, mechanisms, or tools that the program can use to most effectively deal with, interact, back and forth in an active, transparent way with the different stakeholders groups. And we have a general definition of stakeholders here, those likely benefit from the program. And, again, this is just critical to the future of the program. Would like your insights to it, how we could most effectively reach out and in a two-way, transparent, active way engage stakeholders in the future of the program and the application of the research results. Again, we've talked about stakeholders are very broad. EPA, regions, obviously EPA headquarters, state agencies, both the environmental and public health aspects of it, tribes, tribal governments around the country, local governments as well, environmental organizations. It's been brought up to us in the past, cleanup companies. There are a lot of companies out there that play very active roles at EPA sites or federal agency sites in applying EPA guidances to cleanups. Around there, other nonprofit organizations that are promoting environmental justice and other key themes of the program. Again, please, we'd appreciate you weighing in and your comments and thoughts. And also would suggest that the variety of industry reps we have out there. I'm sure you've been active at sites. I know in addition to GE, we have Dow, Shell, a lot of companies working at different aspects of hazardous waste. Please feel free to weigh in and provide some of your experiences or your creative thoughts for the future. Okay. Again, we'll be coming back later in the webinar to emphasize the questionnaire, the online questionnaire we have. So I encourage you here to send in us comments to either by email or on the phone. But also, as you've given more thought to them, would appreciate your weighing in via the online questionnaire and focusing in on the key areas of interest you have that would affect the future of this program. If we can move on to the next slide, slide 21. This is a key part of the future directions of the program. It's dealing with research translation. And again, the key issue that we're asking here is how the Superfund research program can promote that basic goal that it has, accelerating research translation. And again, have a basic definition here, if not everyone is familiar with the research translation terminology, but it's basically the focused effort to ensure that the research coming out of the program is accessible to the multiple end users. And the focus of the research translation part of the program is to accelerate this application of the scientific advances of the program at hazardous waste sites and other applications around the country. So, again, what we're looking at here is, from your experiences, what have been the most effective methods of communication or ones we should be trying that perhaps you haven't tried in the past? How can we best share data in the program? So again, it's a transparent process and that information is being leveraged to the maximum extent possible. Technology transfer, getting new analytic methods, new remedial technologies out there also. Basically would like and appreciate your insights in this area. Have people found, I guess, again, what tools work well, which ones you may have heard of that others are using that we should consider employing, or which ones you've tried and they just don't work? We should not be doing those anymore. Okay. Again,
if I can jump in, and Mike Gill, if you're still out there, I know you all utilize the Live at Region 8, which is a Clue-In-based webinar, you know, linking research that comes out of some of the Southwestern programs to your region. Do you care to comment on how effective that is, or just as an example of?
Certainly. It's basically what we're doing today with with this webinar. We'll have a live, you know, a conference session or something, and then for a couple of years in a row, we've repeated one session over three different 2-hour seminars online, and we've gotten a number of people, I think probably 200 per session, to come online. And it's what it was an expansion of just an EPA meeting to whoever wanted to sign in. And I think the key to the success of these things is not only the subject matter, but who you advertise to. And the folks in our office in D.C. and headquarters have a mailing list and a newsletter that goes out to about 30,000-plus people. So that's kind of a good way to get the word out. But it's been successful. That we fill up the lines. We've had, 100 phone lines and 100 simulcast ports filled up for six of these things over the past year and a half. And that's just one topic. That was green remediation. But, depending on what you want to do, this Clue-In seminar tool is very, very useful.
Good.
Looking forward, Heather?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. The Superfund technical liaisons out there that Mike Gill is a very active one in the EPA San Francisco regional office, have been key partners with the Superfund research program, and it's those kind of people who I think in Malcolm Gladwell's book, our connectors, are the folks we really try to network with and build onto their successes and work with them closely. I think do we have a comment or a question?
Yeah, a comment came in from Mary Dureski from Wayne State University, and I think it might have been pertaining to the last question about stakeholders, but it's still relevant, I think, here, that she suggests that bi-directional interactions throughout the program development process with all stakeholders is a recommendation for SRP to consider in the future.
Okay. Good. Thank you, Mary. Again, we encourage others who want to build on some of the incoming thoughts, please do send in your emails, or please feel free for that smaller subset who are on the phone to join in and build on those incoming ideas. Okay, why don't we move on to slide 22, community engagement. This is an important area, especially to the new administration at EPA. Matthew Stanislaus, the new assistant administrator for solid waste and emergency response, has recently proposed a community engagement strategy. That is basically promoting community involvement in full setting of getting the communities in the broadest sense actively involved in information sharing on local sites of concern, having a transparent process for various communities to fully understand the complexities of sites, and to, as they are understanding the issues, play a full role in the eventual feeding into the eventual decision-making at sites. So
What we're looking at here in these questions that we've broached with community engagement is looking at what approaches to community engagement would you view out there to be most appropriate for the Superfund research program to employ in the future. And related to that, again, what scientific disciplines, in the broadest sense, as Mary and others have been bringing out that can be brought to the fore, are needed to make the greatest impact in promoting community engagement in the Superfund program and the key role that the Superfund research program can play in that. And again, you know, again, looking at the text here, should we in the Superfund research program be looking at newly listed sites by states or EPA or tribes? Should we be looking where there are grant tag grants out there or where there are tags in place? Should we be looking at federal sites, participating with tribes? And how could we best engage with those communities? What tools could be used? At this point, maybe just leave it open, again, from your experiences of what worked, what you hear that is working other places that we should employ, or what you tried that didn't work, and we shouldn't be doing that. Would appreciate your comments and interaction. And Shelley, perhaps you could share with us, as being an RPM at some critical sites, what you would weigh in there as far as appropriate community engagement tools at Superfund sites that we might be able to employ in the Superfund research program?
Sure. One thing that comes to mind is actually something that we did in South Florida when I was there on a rotation, and it addresses two things, that we need social scientists, not just, you know, the biological, chemical fields. And why that was important is the particular area that was impacted was a mix of Cuban, Haitian, Caucasian, African-American populations. And before the community activity started, a social scientist had done basically a demographic analysis. And the key things we learned from that ended up making the communication work is what groups meet where, because they don't all meet in the same. Typically, they met in the evenings in a church setting, and what languages were needed and what kind of daycare was needed so that families really could come. And we found that if you made it more user-friendly rather than what we all are used to with computers and webinars and that type of thing, it wasn't particularly effective. The other thing that I know just from experience at NARPM and hearing on really good community involvement cases where people put kind of like these little cards that you're in a hotel that says do not disturb. You could put those on doorknobs that gave either hotline numbers or information, whether it was lead or some of the things that you could do to make parents aware of perhaps asbestos or lead in their residences, things that were direct and easy, didn't necessarily come with a bill. You know, not everybody reads all the flyers that come with bills, but it was remarkable to see how if you could reach folks in an area where they felt comfortable and welcome to speak, you would get an earful. But if we made the setting that's more typical to what, you know, a lot of us see as more structured or formal, you might miss those opportunities. And even on regular sites here in the Midwest, I found that if you get in tune to the local, either the school superintendents or the local city council folks, yeah, in this one case it was a high school principal, you figure out when do most folks congregate, and it might be a bingo night at a church or another meeting. And so we typically held all our meetings in a church basement. Number one, everybody was a lot nicer. And number two, people really felt comfortable because it was their choice of location. So just a big plug for social scientists who are really, I feel, very gifted in that field to really read people and kind of be a representative for them. And that's where I think we've done some really, you know, better community engagement.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Shelley. That's very helpful. And I guess, again, would open this up to others who could build on
Shelley's comments and insights there, from not only her experience there in the Kansas City regional office, but as she said, when she's worked in other regional offices. I guess I would ask Heather if we've gotten other email comments that we should refer to.
Yeah, we've gotten a couple comments. One is more of a question, asking kind of about clarification. Well, this is from Larry Tannenbaum from U.S. Army Public Health Command. And the question was more about, you know, how often are new Superfund sites added, and if record of decision is already created, then, you know, how relevant is this question? I'm paraphrasing what he asked.
You're doing a good job.
Okay. Thanks, Larry.
I wanted to know just legitimately how severely needed is the push for additional research and such. Are there a number of sites or enough sites that would support the need for this?
Well, if I can just, since it was a question, to clarify, I just wanted to let you know that, you know, of course, there's no requirement that people interact with Superfund sites specifically. So this, you know, this means we're talking about RCRA sites, any state sites, local, tribal. So there's communities, brownfields. I mean, there's communities out there who, you know, are dealing with any interaction with a potential environmental exposure.
Okay.
So it doesn't need to be Superfund.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then, yes, new sites are being added to Superfund.
But at an admittedly much slower rate.
Indeed. But they are being added.
Okay.
Did you want to follow on or?
No, I think. Go ahead, Larry.
No, I'm done. I'm good. Go ahead.
Okay. Were there any other comments, Heather?
Yes, there was. We heard from Mary Doresky of Wayne State University. What she says is that my experience is that communities are very concerned about brownfields and vacant urban lots in the city of Detroit, so more so than Superfund sites that may not be in close proximity to the majority of the residential areas. So she would encourage engagement with communities in those areas of concern. Also agrees with Shelley Brody for the need of social scientists as part of the community engagement activities.
Please appreciate these incoming comments. And Heather, do we have another?
Sure do. We've heard from Amy Kyle from University of California, Berkeley. She's actually a part of one of the Superfund research programs out there. And what she says is, she said, what about the public health concerns that arise from sites that are not managed under Superfund? Many more sites are managed under other authorities than under Superfund. Many are, of course, run by the state. And so in terms of communities, because our guidance speaks mostly about Superfund, that it may be confusing to communities that our research may not apply to them, I think is what I'm reading from Amy's statement.
Okay. No, that's a good comment because obviously it's more broadly applicable, and hazardous waste sites is what we often refer to, I think, in looking at the strategic direction of the program, which is broader than just Superfund, and Amy raises a good point that the whole brownfields movement starting in the 90s and the idea of redevelopment of brownfields, underground storage tank sites, RCRA sites, federal facilities, it is a very broad setting. So it's a good point that the research is more broadly applicable.
And I'd just also like to add to that, as was mentioned earlier in the day, is that in our mandates and legislation, the term hazardous waste sites was not used, but rather hazardous substances. So that really does, in a respect, open the door in as far as thinking about, as both Mary and Amy pointed out, that there are other communities that are impacted by exposure to hazardous substances that may not meet the definition of hazardous waste sites, and that this program could meet those needs also.
Point. Go ahead.
This is Steve Hacker, University of Washington. I just have one comment, and I don't know how to put this delicately, but those of us who receive funding for either training or research and translation, I would just hope in the strategic plan SRP can address this issue of we're often in interacting with tribes or other communities faced with the fact that we have gotten a grant for doing certain things. They may have funds for doing certain other things, and making these work together is not always the easiest thing in the world of federal funding. So I won't say more than that, other than I think it's an issue that if community engagement is a priority, that we work to figure out more efficient ways to engage parties up front and provide the funding that's needed for that to happen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Opportunity here if others would like to expand, add to, or disagree with the comments that we've gotten so far. Again, if you could hear the pens, we are furiously writing notes for the insights that are being provided here that will be employed in the future direction of the programs. And I think we're ready to move on. Heather, if there are no other comments, we'll move on to slide 23, the last question area. And again, this might be more for academic participants, but would certainly encourage the other folks on the line, other parts of the governmental agencies, nonprofits, industry that are participating in today's webinar. And again, it's pulls together what we've been talking about, the interdisciplinary research, the disciplines that are needed, and in this case, it's looking at the grant mechanisms that I believe Heather went over earlier in the presentation, was talking about there are different tools that the program uses, university-wide multi-program grants, that there are 14 of them out there that have multi-projects, including biomedical, non-biomedical, such as engineering analytic methods, and including core programs like research translation, analytic methods, outreach. So there are those kinds of tools, five-year grant programs that are out there. There are project-specific grants that can be employed out there that focus on particular themes, whether it's sediments remediation, nanotechnology, mining, other areas that have been looked at that. So we're basically looking at how you see the future directions of the program. Should it be a mix of these, including small grants to innovative research programs? What type of teams should be employed? What are the key disciplines that you think should be factored in? And I think we've gotten good input on that in the past. This is the last question area, so I basically just leave it open for people's input on grant mechanisms or any of the other questions that we laid out there, that if you would like to provide us your comments now, please do, before we close out this webinar today and provide you direction again to use the questionnaire, online questionnaire that we have for you to provide additional comments that you have that either you didn't have a chance to raise today, or when you've given more thought to it, or you have colleagues who are interested, that you would forward this to them. Any other comments, questions, either online or on the phone line? I think we've pretty well covered the waterfront. Unless there are any other suggestions, I think I will turn it over to Bill Sook, who will be closing out the session today and who started us off at the beginning of the session, giving us some basic overview of the program. And let me turn it back over to you, Bill.
Thank you, Larry. Appreciate it.
This is the last slide, number 24, and I want to thank all of you for your participation and your involvement in this webinar. What the slide you have in front of you right now shows the questionnaires associated with this strategic planning process, and I, please go into it and answer the questions. There's general information about it. If you have any questions, you can go to sbrpinfo@nihs.nih.gov. We're coming down to the wire here as far as pulling together information on these questions, and I just want to let you all know that we're going to be closing this part of the plan out pretty soon, end of the month?
Yeah.
The end of this month, January. And there it says open through January 29th, right up there on the right-hand corner. We will then be pulling together information. But my point, though, is that your input and your involvement is very important. I also suggest that you may consider sending this to friends and colleagues and getting their input and thoughts on the questions that are being posed as we begin to pull all this information together so that we can do this in a very deliberate and diligent way to fashion a plan. We will then get comments back later on, but this is your opportunity to provide the data that we're going to go from. Anyway, I want to thank you all for participating, and have a good rest of the day. Thank you.